Everyone's got those songs that make them go, oh man, I felt that. Songs that resonate with their own individual circumstances and bring them together with others through shared connection. But the same song is guaranteed to speak to different people in vastly different ways. So join Dayton and I, once childhood neighbors in Marathon City, Wisconsin, as we talk through the songs that have struck a chord with us. We'll discuss the similar messages we've heard upon our listens, the lessons we've learned through our own interpretations, and the deeper topics we're navigating as our own unique journeys continue beyond our hometown. Welcome to Marathon Mixtapes. Dayton, what's the song tonight?
Tonight, Jordan, we're talking about one of my favorite songs from my college years, a song by a band called Bleachers, who many people may know as one of Jack Antonoff's projects. And this is off their 2017 album, Gone Now, and it's the closing track, a song called Foreign Girls. And I found throughout my life, I have a bit of a preference for songs that feel like end credit songs, even though we're not quite to the end of this volume of Marathon Mixtapes. I wanted to talk about this song now because there's a lot of dimensions to it, and I know you found a lot of meaning in it listening to it. And it's, to get right into it, Jack Antonoff has talked about this as sort of a pop meditation on death, leaving, wrapping up a life and putting a button on it in some way. And Foreign Girls is easily one of the songs on this album that really brings all these themes together. The whole album talks about these ideas, but Foreign Girls is where it really distills down into some heavy moments that are twinged with hope, and yet there's such a current of melancholy as an undercurrent to it all. So it reads not just as like the end of this album, it reads as the end of a life. The song kind of goes through a rather innocuous day, you know, talking about visiting a pawn shop and going through a car wash, but then there's explicit goodbyes given to these various characters that feel very specific from the narrator's voice, but at the same time, I think they're people we could easily picture within our own lives. It's a really beautiful song. It almost has this weird sort of PBS kind of vibe to it. Like I picture a friendly neighborhood, right? And somebody leaving it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the song is totally unlike, especially at the time when I first discovered it in college or towards the end of my college career. It's a song that on paper, if you describe how this song sounds, it does not make sense why I like it musically. Like I, especially at that age, was kind of an indie rock purist, and I would dabble in EDM a little bit, but this song has like very deliberately auto-tuned vocals. It has this weird lo-fi hip-hop feel. It has these gospel bits to it with the backing chorus and stuff like that. It does not fit what Dayton liked at the time, but something about this song just gripped me. And it especially did that as I found meaning in the song that is adjacent to its themes of death, but are very personal to me. And that's what I'd really like to talk about tonight. So I left Lutheranism. It was my Christian faith background growing up. I left it in 2023. And this song leading up until that moment was a place of comfort for me, because I feel like this song, and maybe it's because faith and death and afterlife and things like that are all kind of tied together. But this song for me, I found a lot of power in listening to it when I was grappling with my faith and weighing that decision to leave my particular synod and my particular denomination and pursue Christianity at a little bit of a broader perspective. So there's a lot of tiny little lyrics in this song that I probably overblow and probably totally twist to my own little story, but it really works for me personally. And it's become sort of a little personal mantra representing the messiness of my faith deconstruction and a little bit of my faith reconstruction as well. So In case you were anxious about talking about death tonight, I'm going to throw religion into the mix. How about that?
That sounds amazing.
I know. So I won't get into the nitty-gritty details of it quite yet, but I did want to get your thoughts on the song. I know that you've looked into some of the explanations that Jack Antonoff has had for the song, sort of extra textually, so metatextually, because I offered that up to you a couple weeks back, a couple months back. So what's your take on this song? Are you what kind of meaning have you found in it personally?
I to start off, like I haven't listened to a whole lot of Bleachers before you've introduced this song to me, and those videos too that kind of has Jack Antonoff explaining himself and kind of his thought process of writing the songs. And like you said, it's the last song of the album. It's a song where the whole album is constructed to be like his whole life from start to finish. And I really resonated with how you said that this song really feels like an end credits song. And I personally also really love that type of music and any music that feels like you could play as the credits roll for a movie. And I like to think a lot of music I like, not necessarily like end credits, but like if you think of the old movie, like The Breakfast Club. When the guy's like walking down the football field at the end of the movie with his like fist in the air,
Yeah.
like walking off to the sunset or driving off into the sunset type of music, very similar to end credits. But yeah, like that kind of music I feel usually has not necessarily has more meaning, but it's easier to feel that meaning, at least for me. And what I find interesting about this song specifically, Foreign Girls, is that it's the last song of the album, and the album's about like a life from start to finish. But Foreign Girls is actually not the song that like represents his death. That's like one or two tracks before.
Right.
And Foreign Girls is like the post-death.
Yes.
And I didn't realize this until like I listened to him, Jack talk about it. But the album cover makes so much more sense now that like I've kind of listened to him talk about the album. But the album cover is Jack Antonoff in like military regalia, in like a pose in like black and white photo.
Yeah,
And
sort of looks like a mid 1900s kind of almost like a dictator, or at least like some sort of highly regarded general in sort
yeah, he's like
of
blinged out. He's
times
got white
past.
gloves. Yeah, he's got like the hat, everything, and he's like looking off into the distance, like very regal pose.
Wistfully, yes.
And I imagine like this song, Foreign Girls, as the last song, is like played at his funeral, and the album cover is like a photo that's like on the casket.
Yes, the on a big easel nearby.
Yeah. And the song just kind of goes and sings about like his last will and testament of like things that maybe he forgot to say. And just as a quick shout out to our last episode, Ite, which was a song about like losing someone and things that you weren't able to say to them. I feel like Foreign Girls is a really good like mirror to that song, because to me it represents the other side where it's from the perspective of the person who has gone
Yes.
and kind of all the things that he wanted to say and all the things he wanted to leave behind, but not necessarily was able to with intent because, he died. It's just kind of all the thoughts that the person had or Jack had, like writing that is expressed through this song that I imagine is like someone reading out his will. And I understand kind of how this song kind of would resonate with you when you're talking about your stories about like leaving your religion and things like that, because like an end credit song, they're good songs to like mark and bookend like chapters of your life, not necessarily like, I mean, death is an obvious bookend or like an end of a chapter to your life, but I think we all have very multifaceted lives that have various chapters that you could end with a song like this, and be very appropriate and poignant, I think. Again, just to briefly talk about the lyrics before we kind of get into a deeper discussion. One of them that like resonated with me a lot personally is just in the chorus, Jack Antonoff sings like trying to find my way back home because I know I've been a stranger lately. That line, because I know I've been a stranger lately, is one that I think about all the time when I hear the song and sing along to, because I feel like I've always, the way I come off to people, especially like close friends, I feel like I can come off as a stranger, not just lately, but like a lot of times. And then we can get into this a little bit later, but it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, I kind of wish people knew. But sometimes it's not always easy, at least for me, to like just be very vocal and vulnerable, because, you know, there's always a time and place for things like that. And again, just to reiterate the points that I was saying early on, it's just, well, that's what I love about this song, is that it feels like a will of like the last things Jack Antonoff wants to say, if he hadn't gotten a chance to say them before he passed. And this is kind of like the breaking case of emergency type of thing, just so that everybody is on the same page, you know?
If you're listening to this song, I'm already dead.
Oh, no. But yeah, like the end of the song, right? You had mentioned before, he says explicit goodbyes to people, goodbye to the friends I had, goodbye to my upstairs neighbor, goodbye to the kids downstairs and anybody who lent me a favor. These are all people that, like you said, we could all probably connect with on some level. And it just ends with a string of him repeating, I loved you all, like over and over, which I love, because again, it's for me personally, like the song as not even just like the end credits, right? But also feels like an epilogue type of thing.
Oh, love that word in this context. Absolutely.
Because like I had mentioned before, the song in this album is technically like after the actual like death, which, because I think he has a song in this album previously just called Goodbye. And I think that's more of the song that is like to represent the end of, I guess, the life of that in that album. And then this comes after. Yep. And
there are some shared musical motifs between a lot of the songs on this album too, but
which is really cool.
The crossover between Goodbye and Foreign Girls is pretty explicit. Like, you will recognize it even upon like first or second listen through the album.
And again, to the epilogue point, like, I feel like whenever we watch a good movie with characters we really love and we get to the end of the story, I feel like, isn't it natural to like, man, I wonder like what's the rest of their life look like? And we always kind of wish for an epilogue to the characters of our favorite stories. Yes. And this song to me again feels a little bit like that, right? Like it's that epilogue where you get a little bit more of, I guess in this case, Jack Antonoff, but like the character of this album, of a character we've grown to really enjoy and like in the story. And whatever may have happened in the story, I feel like it ends it on like a positive, like lighthearted note.
Yeah, there's something really powerful about the repetition of I loved you all. It's a very simple phrase, very simple lyric. But the fact that this character has just gone through this list of friends, somebody you're pretty intimately connected with, upstairs neighbor, we can guess that was probably a pretty acquaintance level relationship, but there's a sort of an implied distance there, right? And then goodbye to the dream downstairs, that's like sort of like these memories or these ideas of what life might have been like that might not have been fulfilled. And goodbye to the way we talk, goodbye to the things we bought. Like, we're talking very non-physical and then physical things, like the immaterial and then the material. This person is saying, I loved all of it, which I think is just an awesome message. I think it's easy to write a song that's like, I loved the noble parts of life, or I liked, you know, being with friends and family. Like, we all obviously like that. That there's nothing new to be said there. But I think there's this last series of lines is just a great way for to hammer home that this character just loved life and everything it offered, which I think makes the song all the more like a bittersweet, right? Because this person seems like there might have been some things left unsaid. There might have been some things left undone. They miss these innocuous things, and they mention doing very routine things, and they seem to say it with some sort of reverence. But then it's like they appreciated it. I don't know. I think there's a cool... there's a cool kind of universal acceptance of everything that life is here at the end of this song. And that's really resonated with me, really hammered home that credit song epilogue kind of feel, and makes it feel, the whole album and the song feel complete, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to go back to the stranger line too, I'm glad that you connected with that line in particular, because it's one I go back to in my brain. It's one I almost have in my back pocket, even outside of my very personal faith journey that I've sort of aligned to this song. But that, when I think about that line, I think about all the moments when I was, you know, too in my head and didn't act the way I wanted to around my wife, my friends, my family. And it's such a great line to encapsulate what it's like to be just off, just to be in your head, just to not the person that you want to be around those that you love and those that you want to give the most of yourself to and the most of your authentic self. To just say, I know I've been a stranger lately. It feels like, yeah, sorry. I know I've been weird. I know I've been quiet. I know I've been snippy, whatever. You know, it can take a lot of different forms, but that's specific word choice, stranger, so powerful. It's like, just to say, I know I've been not completely recognizable. I know I've been like the silhouette of my typical self, but that's not quite Dayton, or that's not quite Jordan. What a powerful, powerful choice of words. And it, like I said, it's become kind of part of my mental kind of lingo, the one that when I do feel off, when I do feel in my head, I think about myself kind of as a stranger, and sometimes even to myself. Ooh, spooky. But I find that language helpful, you know, just to allow myself back into the conversation, like literally, like my true self, if you want to get kind of wooey about it, to allow the Dayton I want to be to take over the wheel again. Cause it's a nice delineation, right? To say, I've been somebody else because I haven't let my feelings out, or I haven't coped with something in a healthy way. And just to let Dayton drive, we'll get this stranger out of the way and people will be able to see me again. So I'm glad you connected with that line. It's one that's not just memorable for me, but useful, you know, which is,
yeah,
I think that's a pretty high compliment for a song.
Yeah. And honestly, I think I get that too, but I also kind of like how it's a line in the chorus, so it gets repeated multiple times, and I think gets repeated like 3 to 4 times, like in a single chorus. But something that I've been just kind of thinking about right now is that he says, you know, because I know I've been a stranger lately, I've been a stranger lately. He iterates it a lot to kind of, in a way, he sings it too in a tone that kind of is like, yeah, I know, like, he's agreeing to some sentiment from someone talking to him, but he doesn't like apologize for it, or he doesn't like make a reasoning. He just kind of acknowledges it. And as a song that we both feel like does a good job of like feeling like the end credits to a story or an epilogue, I think not only does it have that like feeling of when you hear that specific line, you're like, you think of like times where you were like in your head. And, you know, you could be more of your genuine self and you try to get back to that, you know, get out of that funk or whatever. But I feel like another reading that I take from it is that, yeah, like, I guess when I look back, you know, a certain number of years or months, any time period, and I look at myself now and I compare to myself then, I could see why you think I've been a stranger lately. Me, it like... has that another meaning of just an indication of change. So
yes,
kind of like how we talked about all the way back in episode one, you know, 100 years, Five for Fighting, and how, like, we talk about how people change as they go through their journey of life and go through different phases. People change. And I think this lyric of just, you know, acknowledging that you've been a stranger because you've changed, you know, you've gone through life, it's shaped you, and now you're something different. And I think it really fits with the theme of, like, not necessarily ending, but, like, as I brought up earlier, kind of like a chapter end, right? Like,
yeah,
things that you acknowledge, like, okay, this is different now. Like, I'm a different person now because of something that I went through recently, and maybe, you know, that's caused people who knew me very well at a specific point in my life would look to me now and not really necessarily recognize completely who the person I am now compared to the person I was then. Yeah, and I guess if you'd care to talk about it, I'd be very interested in learning kind of how this song listened to and kind of related to your story of removing yourself from your, like, religion. Because I know that as someone that's not particularly religious myself, I have not had that experience, but I've grown up around enough people in a small, you know, rural town and met a lot of people in other places I live that are very strong in their faith. And I know it's a very important thing and, like, a core pillar of who they are. So I can only imagine when you first told me about your, I guess, struggles with your denomination and the fact that you eventually did, like, walk away. I can only imagine. I don't know what the right turn of phrase is, but I'm sure I'm underestimating the severity and kind of impact a decision like that must have been for you. So I'm curious how, like, this song played a role in kind of keeping that memory, or just, like, if it's had any effect on you to do that, to take a step away, or if this song is more of like a reminder of those time of that, like, experience for you.
Yeah, so, well, thanks for being so considerate too, because this is a big topic for me and not something I talk about publicly often. When people ask me about it, I'm always happy to talk about it because it is such a big part of who I am now. And let's be frank, I mean, you witnessed it too with us growing up together. A lot of people around me growing up, especially once I got into middle school and really started encapsulating, really just swallowing up and gobbling up everything I could about my faith and really getting into it, my faith at that time, a lot of people saw me as, like, the good Christian kid. Like, he's always really involved in the church. He does X and Y, yada, yada, yada. And an important element to this, too, is that I actually ended up working for my job at the synod that I was involved in for a while. And that was part of the whole unraveling here too, but I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. But I think what will make some people startled is that I've had this journey. If they haven't asked me about it, you know, not a whole lot of people go around asking people about, oh, where are you at in your faith? Some people do. I don't know if we like those people, but
do you have room for Jesus in your heart right now?
Gosh, an old lady on the Milwaukee streets asked me one time, and I just said, yep, I'm good. And then...
And just moved on.
Just moved on with my day. She's just like, do you know Jesus Christ? I'm like, I've heard of him. So, and so this is going to be a lot for me, but I'm prepared to talk about it, especially with you, because I've alluded to having this faith journey before, but I don't think I've really talked about it in detail with you. So I'd love to hear your perspective of somebody who really didn't grow up in a church and really just had brushes with it in ways that I didn't experience. So I want to make sure I'm also going into this conversation saying, like, don't discredit your, what you would consider your lack of experience, because that's offering an experience that I don't have. So it'll be cool to hear what you think about some of these sort of obstacles I hit along the way. But I think the last caveat before I really dive into this is, because I know my parents will be listening, is that I still consider myself a Christian. I think I used a line in one of our previous episodes, and I think this holds pretty true. It says, I consider myself a Christian, but not the kind of Christian that a lot of other Christians would claim. Like, they're like, oh, he's not ours. He's just kind of a weird dude. I've absorbed a lot of different variations of Christianity and sort of picked and choose what I liked and thrown out some of the things that I felt like were toxic to me or weren't compatible with the way that I want to live my life. I want to be careful not to use the word lifestyle because people call me out on that too, which is like, oh, you just want to live a life of sin, don't you? No. I want to live a life that I am proud of and one that doesn't feel arbitrary. So one that's filled with meaning, filled with purpose, and one that's really driven by kindness. And that's really what's been my operating system for picking apart my Christianity and putting it back together again. So that's, I think, my last caveat before I really get back to the song here is just like, I still consider myself a Christian, and I'm always happy to talk to people about it and what sort of brought me to where I'm at. But, you know, just so my mom can sleep at night. Yeah, don't worry, Mom, still Christian. So at any rate, what really... there's one lyric in this song that just hit me one day. I listened to this song countless times in 2017 when Gone Now came out. And I remember I was driving along Lincoln Memorial Drive in Milwaukee. And at that time, 2017. Yeah, I would have been working for the Synod or just about prepared to. And I was working for their publishing house and then starting to dabble in their Synod-wide publication, sort of a magazine kind of thing. And I had maybe like the early 2010s, started to have little doubts and questions. It started with the simple stuff, the simple sort of existential. I shouldn't call it simple because it might not be simple for some people, but for me, it was started out kind of broad. Maybe broad's the right word, where it's like, okay, my particular version, my particular flavor of Christianity claims to have all the details right, and I just was born into it. That seems a little weird. That seems a little convenient, doesn't it? So started kind of with questions of that, and I had a girlfriend throughout high school who was staunchly Catholic. I really admired her for her dedication to her faith, but at the end of the day, we had very specific theological disagreements. We literally argued over them sometimes, like the nature of the sacrament of communion or what the nature of worship should be. Very, very odd things for like 15 to 17 year olds to be talking about, but that's just the kind of kids that we were, right? But I think that also speaks to just how involved I was in the church. So I started having these doubts sort of towards the end of my teenage years. And this was a huge contrast from where I started out. In the particular brand of Christianity where I was at, it was a conservative type of Lutheranism. And we really were educated on our faiths in middle school. And when I say educated on our faiths, I mean like you go through the dogma of it, you know, a catechism class. I don't know if that's a universal term across Christian faith, but that's what we called it. And as you can guess by the name, Lutheranism, Martin Luther, we were looking through Martin Luther's catechism, basically line by line, memorizing as much as we could and absorbing as much as we could. And I really took to it. I was like, yep, this makes sense. There's very clear senses of right and wrong. And I can do this. I can memorize this. I can ace all the tests. I can remember these verses. I can resonate with these ideas because they're based off of this one particular translation of the Bible that I'm very familiar with. And this all makes sense. Great. So I had this very neatly packaged version of Christianity sort of ready to go and ready to carry with me anywhere I went, which for the kind of sort of preteen, teenager, early teenager I was, that was great. It gave me the reassurance that I was in the right camp, that I was, it's like, okay, you've got this part of your life figured out. You can worry about the other stuff now, that kind of thing. Gave me that permission to not think about my morals in a critical way, not think about my death in a critical way, not think about my relationship with my family and friends really in a critical way, because as long as they were in my camp with me, I had nothing to worry about, kind of thing. And so, you know, I think when I had a Catholic girlfriend and when I started hanging around with more people of different faiths who were equally as fired up about their particular version of Christianity or another faith or a lack thereof, just as fired up as I was, that's when the cracks started to show. So that journey began like before college, you know. So when I moved to college, as I've talked about before, I really stopped going to church and I sort of just left my faith by the wayside there for a while. And I went to church every once in a while, was a little involved with an on-campus ministry, but really, again, didn't find an avenue to think critically about my faith. So when it came to Sunday mornings, that brings it back to foreign girls here. When it came to Sunday mornings, I simultaneously felt like I was making a better use of my time by not going to church, but also felt like something was missing. I was in this weird limbo time. I was lost on Sunday morning, trying to find my way back home, walking in circles. There's just all of these lines. I was like, this feels like how I feel on the Sabbath day. And, you know, of course, you know, Sabbath being whenever you designate it, I guess. But in this case, a Sunday. And I just started to think about this song in that tangle I was feeling, and this tangle I hadn't really addressed in a thoughtful way. You know, it gave me the space, like so many of these songs do. It gave me the space to think about something in a sympathetic way. It gave me a chance to be like, oh, people have, even if this wasn't explicitly like a sort of religious allusion, this idea that Jack Antonoff might be like, oh, I'm gonna use, I could drop any day of the week in here, but I'm gonna use Sunday because it thinks people can think about church then, or people can think about their faith then. Even if that wasn't intended, it felt like somebody out there too was struggling with their place when they weren't sure that they wanted to be a churchgoer, or they weren't sure if they wanted to be a particularly part of like a specific church or something like that. It just hit me and captured so many of those confused things that I was feeling, and again, not addressing, just not picking up and dealing with. It got so much to the point where, you know, shortly before this song came out, I was working for a religious organization that was affiliated with my church, with my synod, and it was difficult. It was really tough. Some of my old coworkers might even listen to this episode. Apologies if they do, but because this will be the first time they're hearing this. But that's really where things started to fall apart for me. You know, as I was writing copy for the backs of books and emails advertising the various specific things that we were publishing, I started to realize I was subconsciously pushing back on a lot of it. I remember some particular books were calling out people who believe in evolution, people who are part of the LGBTQ community. And when I say calling out, it wasn't explicitly like a takedown of them. You know, my church, I like to call them a, oh, just so you know, kind of church, where they will welcome anybody and they will let you get integrated, let you get involved, maybe even put you on a committee or something. And then they might have known the whole time that you were, you know, maybe very scientifically minded or part of the LGBTQ community or even just an ally. And then once you're too deep in it for you to leave easily, they'll say, oh, hey, just so you know, we're really not cool with that. And so that's sort of my, I guess, kind of teasing-ish term for it, is a just so you know kind of church. So they're not very outwardly like offensive, but when it comes down to it, they won't stand by some of these marginalized communities or prevailing beliefs that are contradictory to their more conservative brand of Christianity.
Sure.
So I was trying to advertise these books and things like that, and I just couldn't do it. I realized even some of the language that I was choosing was pushing back on some of the things that the very books were saying. And I had a handful of disagreements with my supervisors about, like, I was like, I want to word it this way because I know my generation, and I know my generation is not feeling welcomed by this particular church. And I know this is how we feel about this issue. And they're like, well, that's not what the white guys up in who run the church councils and things like that really think. And the people who assign the letter of the law and, you know, follow the specific interpretation of biblical text, it's like, that's not what we've decided. So you cannot say it. So there were some very, very direct conversations like that. And I eventually left that job. I claimed that I just needed to change a pace and that I needed to get better mental health, which was true, because I was very stressed out at the time. And this was the first time that I sought therapy because my identity was so tied up in my work, very literally. And then again, because of my relationship with work in general, which we've talked about in our Brandon Flowers episode, Between Me and You especially. So I sought out therapy, really started to break away from them, a lot of these ideas again. But then when Kate and I got married, we were struggling to find, like, oh, where do we want to get married? We know we want to get married in a church. Oh, I guess we'll just go to another one of my churches, you know? So we found another church within my synod. And thankfully, the pastor there was very kind and did marry us. And I was very clear with him up front where I was at. And I respect him so much for hearing me out. We had a conversation, I think it was maybe the second or third time I met him, and he was looking for an opportunity to get me more involved. Like I said, these are people who really want to integrate you, which can be helpful. It's not a wholly unhelpful trait for an organization to have. You know, they want you to feel welcome and to feel useful. And so my conversations with him were basically like, I'm not comfortable getting any more involved than strict on the books membership and getting, like, married. And my explanation to him, I stick to this phrase still a lot when I talk to people about how I feel about a conservative, very hard-lined, very narrow interpretation of the Bible serving a whole sort of faith church. And I straight up told him that I felt like this particular brand of faith was, quote, limiting my capacity for kindness, end quote. And that was hard to shake, you know. It was something I hadn't planned to tell him. It was just the way the conversation went. And when I said that, I think I knew it was over. I really did. And, you know, this was even before Kate and I got married, but, you know, we stuck to it for long enough. We were as members of the church for a little bit into COVID years, you know. Like I said, in 2023 is when I officially left. And I think it took me all that time to realize that I was no longer a good fit for that church. I just really didn't want to have convenient answers. I don't think that's realistic. I think assigning something as complex as life experience, and if you want to get into the sort of, you know, metaphysical elements of it, the ideas of afterlife, the ideas of sort of cosmic morality, to assign that to a theology that we can all kind of memorize in middle school and regurgitate back and forth to each other. If that's what we're putting our chips on, that's probably not the right answer. I know I've been talking for a while here, but that's really what it came down to for me. And just the fact that there were so many simple disagreements to just straight up theological disagreements that I had with them, namely about the treatment of LGBTQ people, the reverence or lack thereof of science within the larger worldview, the way that even women are viewed within family structures and within church organizations. I think there's a lot of work that Christian faiths in general can work on there, you know, but my particular church was not great at it. So I aside from those very literal disagreements, I think I just had a larger philosophical disagreement with the way that faith was experienced and packaged with my previous church. And it was really tough to finally make that decision and leave that behind, because I was born into this church. I was baptized into this church. My parents were married in this particular synod. And my parents are still part of it, and I don't love them any less for it, you know, and they know my gripes, but so to say goodbye to this church, it really did feel like a death in a way. And for people who don't agree with my move to leave, they definitely see it like as a death. It's like, oh no, your mortal soul. But for me, it still felt like a death, because I was saying goodbye to a whole identity. I was saying goodbye to some things that I really enjoyed. I think that part of the reason I took to my faith so much is because it did do a good job of offering community. And like I said, finding roles for people to feel useful, to feel productive, to feel valued even. Yeah. So, and I think that's something that any church sort of worth their salt should be capable of doing. And to leave that behind is not an easy thing to do, you know? So I sympathize with anybody who, because I've been through it and now I'm so opposite of a lot of what this church believes, but anybody who is struggling with like leaving a more conservative version of not just a church or like a more conservative version of a faith, but like of a lifestyle behind even, it's hard to do, because there's a lot of conveniences and some straight up positive traits that go with it. But I felt a very distinct disconnect, you know, when I finally dropped that resignation letter into a mailbox. And this song feels like that moment in a lot of ways. You know, I did this at a mailbox within my neighborhood, where I was living in Milwaukee at the time, and sun was shining, birds were singing. And I remember thinking of, I remember like sort of acting out the moment very, very cinematically, dropping the letter in and looking up to the sky and just being like, because I still believe in a higher power, a Christian God, I suppose you could say. I just looked up and I was like, all right, we'll just figure out the next steps together, I guess. It was very much that kind of moment. And it was me shoving off a previous chapter of life and sailing on to an unknown. And thankfully, I've had a lot of great resources to support me in my new kind of take on Christianity. Not new, like I'm offering something new to the world, but new to me. You know, I've found a lot of comfort in reading works by the Jesuits, and there's a lot of great voices out there, even in stand-up comedy, who are representing Christianity in such a fun way. And not fun as in digestible, but fun as in more thoughtful, more critical, more engaging, more connected to our daily life. And Pete Holmes is my big example of that. He's been such a comfort to me throughout all these years, as the song has. And I think what really ties the song back to my life as I'm living it right now, because I'm not going assigned to a church right now, but I still consider like prayer and thinking about the divine, if you want to go that deep. I think that's very much part of my daily life. And the song has moments like that too, where you think about going to a pawn shop, getting a ring and a wristwatch, gift for somebody, something very small, but kindness is there, and going through a car wash, got to get cleaned now. This idea of sort of self-care, self-maintenance. I think this character in this song finds spiritual depth to daily life, and I like to think I do too, and that's what keeps me connected. That's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me happier than I think I would be without some semblance of religion in my life yet. So that's why I still kind of hold on to it and sort of have my own brand of it right now, sort of have my own flavor. But this song captures all those moments of doubt, but also those glimmers of hope, but also those ideas of leaving a community behind or a very specific idea of what life could be. You're leaving that in the past and you're going to live in some new way. Don't know what it looks like. And just in the same way that this character doesn't know what life, if there is one after death, looks like, it's this very, very distinct divide. So I own up to it now. You know, I like the way that I've been taught to think about the world through the thing, resources that I've sought out sort of post-Lutheranism. But also I've also found ways to teach myself too, you know, or at least listen to my daily life and see the goodness in it and find a lot of joy and peace and love in that. You know, I think one example, just to sort of tie up this whole long rambling odyssey that I've given you, I think to sum it up in kind of a beautiful way, if I do say so myself, is the way that Kate and I try to think about our expressing our faiths, because she's still a Christian as well. And we always talk about how spending our Sunday mornings, if we can spend it showing love for one another, you know, whether that's cooking breakfast or making an extra special cup of coffee or doing a chore that the other person was dreading, it's like, if we can do that for one another, that's probably a better way to serve God than to sit in a pew and shake hands and sing a few hymns ever could do. You know, those moments, those serving God or serving a divine kind of idea through other people is more powerful than making sure you show up and you're checking a box for what now kind of feels like an outdated kind of ritual, right? So, but again, all respect to people who still have that part of their lives, but it doesn't work for me in the way that I express myself and my connection to a divine idea is through other people and the way that I want to treat them. You know, I don't want to have a limited idea of kindness anymore. I want to express kindness and find kindness through other people. And I think there's a lot that we've ignored by not embracing that idea and sticking more to, oh, this is what my faith says, this is what my theology says. It's like, no, well, what does it mean to you when you're kind to somebody? What does it mean to you when you're loving to somebody? There's power there. Why not try that? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that's it. Wrap it up, everybody.
I mean, thanks for sharing. And as someone who is not, I guess, very religious, but have always been in communities that where religion is such like a bedrock for, like, because Marathon for a small town was, you know, very religious because it was a small farming town in rural America. I mean, and that was like another reason where sometimes I felt like othered in the town. Mm-hmm. Religion is always something that I guess like fascinates me a little bit. I feel like as someone who's non-religious, I spend a lot of time thinking about religion, not just like Catholicism, but like other forms, like, you know, like Buddhism, like Muslim people and like how they do things. I agree that like I've had conversations with people like even back in like high school, just like talking about theology in general, just all the good things that religion can provide. And you've mentioned it in your story, you know, like the biggest one I think is just a community, right? A group of people that you can turn to have like a sense of belonging. I do appreciate like the religious texts that are taught for the sake of teaching like values. So yeah, I'm not very well read on the specifics of like Catholicism, but you know, like I assume like the Ten Commandments and things like that, where you have these rules to be like a good person. And I think one of the major conflicts or like gripes, I guess, I have with honestly like any religion is that sometimes like for all the good that it can have, it portrays its doctrine very like dogmatically and
exactly
feels like there's no room for flexibility or changing. And you see this a lot with people that are also, I feel, struggling with their faith and like Catholicism when they bring up certain passages of the Bible. And it's like, well, Leviticus told us we can't eat lobster, but that's fine, right? And then you get into the arguments of like people having debates and like picking and choosing which passages to follow and which ones to like sweep under the rug because it suits them. It does a very good job, I think, of othering other people if they don't share your faith. And one nice thing, I guess, with our more like globalization of our, you know, society because of advancements in technology is that we have more interactions with people of different faith. And I'd like to say, fortunately, more people than not are seeing that a lot of times we share the same values if we have different religions, but it's expressed in different ways, or we're taught these values through different stories and parables in our own religious texts. I like to think, when you were telling your story, I was thinking about like my childhood, and I feel like I had I had many components of a religion, but without the, I guess, like dogmatic backbone of a specific God. Because I remember growing up as a kid, every Sunday morning, I wouldn't go to church, but I'd go to Mandarin school, which would be like the six Chinese kids going to one of the kids' parents' house, and she would teach us Mandarin for like an hour or two. And it made our own little like community there. We had to memorize poems and recite them. And these poems were...
That's remarkably similar to what we did like Sunday school and catechism class, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and these would be like...
Because the Bible it does contain a lot of poetry, whether or not people believe that, you know?
Yeah, I remember like we'd have to memorize poems and like short stories that were basically like fables and stuff that had like, you know, meaning to them. But obviously a lot of these stories and poems were more secular, like there were no religious undertones, but they had like a meaning to be taken at the end of things. And even today,
sure,
like I still, you know, not super religious, but I always like flip-flop because I don't feel strongly about my personal like labels in terms of religion. So I always flip-flop between like atheism and agnostic, because like I said, I understand the value of religion, of all the good it can do. Sometimes it can be a little bit like heavy-handed with what it's trying to like spoon feed me when I'm just looking to try to go through this world without making too many ripples. All that to say is like even today, like every Sunday I go to my tea shop and I spend hours there just like meditating or just like unwinding, and it's become like a ritual that feels very much like people going to church, right? Like I guess now,
oh yeah,
my church is the Church of Tea.
Oh yeah, one of my good friends is he takes on the label atheist and owns it, and he was also a great resource during a lot of my deconstruction and reconstruction, you know, even though we disagree on, you know, sort of the broader outlook of things. But he and I for a couple months, when I was really, really struggling, had video game church where we would wake up on a Sunday morning and we played some Magic the Gathering Arena. We played some RuneScape, like classic RuneScape. it just anything to sort of help me fill that void for a little while, but also not have me feel like beholden to this thing that I was disagreeing with. So yeah, tea church, video game church. I think it's, you know, mornings are underrated.
Yeah,
people need to spend more time just like doing shit in the mornings. It is the best. I've been regularly waking up at about 5:30 in the morning now, and it feels like a cheat code on life. It's the best.
And when you're like telling your story of kind of your journey through kind of questioning your like religious upbringing, it reminded me of a story, and I don't know if you remember this, but I remember when we were kids and hanging out, we used to love watching Chopped on the Food Network all the time. And like I said, I don't know if you remember this, but I remember when we found out Ted Allen, the host of Chopped, was gay. And
yeah,
I don't know how you felt about it internally, but I remember like seeing your reaction. You were like, it was weird because it felt like you, up to that point, you and I both like loved the show, loved watching chefs cook random ingredients. And then we learned this like one fact about the host that has honestly nothing to do with the show itself. And to me, I remember very shortly afterwards, you seemed very, I guess, troubled about like this new information that this host was gay, even though like, for me, I was like, yeah, I guess like, you know, people in Catholicism aren't really big on that, right? But it's not like that's a big part of how he, I guess, like portrays himself on the show, or if like he's still just a dude hosting the show about cooking.
Right.
But it was, to me, it was a very surprising moment that like it had such a big impact on you, at least from my perspective. And I was curious if you remember that.
I do. And I don't know if it says more about your sort of social acumen at that age, which is impressive, or more about my shit poker face at that age. But yes, I mean, that is the kind of stuff that, you know, to put it frankly, I was taught to feel troubled about. You know, I there's a very similar mm-hmm. example from middle school, and there's another element to this too that I'll get into. There's another example from that middle school time where, and one that you would connect with too. I don't remember if it was online or somebody had told me it at school, but they had said that, oh, Zach Braff, the guy from who plays GD on Scrubs, you know, Scrubs is a show you and I both loved, and one that mm-hmm. was like a huge part of my sense of humor at the time, you know, even though I probably understood only maybe like a third of the jokes at that age. Somebody had told me like, oh yeah, Zach Braff's gay. And I remember being like, damn.
Like, you know, like my world just got shocked,
right? And because it was like I was told that like, oh, if these people have this kind of lifestyle, there's something to fix about them, not necessarily that we shouldn't associate mm-hmm. with them, you know. My church wasn't that extreme, but they were like, oh, before sure. they get right with God, they've got to figure this out, kind of thing, you know. And
yeah,
I think part of the reason that these two particular, one a rumor, one a fact, about Ted Allen, you know, he's a gay, happily married man, you know, right now, as far as I remember, at least last time I checked, I guess, last time I read his wiki. And then Zach Braff, who is straight, I think, as far as I'm concerned. But I think what had troubled me about...
I think he's dating Florence Pugh.
I think he was for a while, which is... Hey, yeah. Good taste, man. I love Florence Pugh. She's great. Anyway, I think what also troubled me about those facts and like sort of accusations or rumors was that I really, really identified with Ted Allen and with Zach Braff and with JD.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up because I just...
You know, I think I don't remember if it was you or somebody else who had said that, like, oh, Dayton, you kind of carry yourself like Ted Allen does. You know, I was a kid with glasses and I had kind of like this game showy kind of vibe about myself, you know. And
yeah, I do remember that. Mm-hmm. I remember, yeah, I think I made that quote and you're like, yeah, I am like Ted Allen's cool. And then I think we found out, you know, that he was gay. And then, like,
right,
you had this weird, not, I mean, it wasn't weird, it was very valid, like, conflict, like, oh, I thought I was like Ted Allen, but I'm not gay. Like,
right.
And it just felt like a bag of bricks had hit you. You know, just taken out by a sack of bricks.
No, I think that's a fair metaphor to use, really. And it's like, I think what I really appreciated about it makes a little bit more sense to talk about, I guess, within the sense of Zach Braff's character JD in Scrubs, is that like this is a very like affectionate, very bookish, not necessarily explicitly like macho masculine kind of man, and he's the main character. Like I've never found, first to get the one thing out of the way, out of respect for my friends who are in the LGBTQ community, I haven't had that struggle, you know, personally. I've always considered myself heterosexual, always had an interest in women, whatever. Like that's never been my struggle, so I want to leave space for people who have had that struggle, especially if they were in like a conservative faith or something like I was, and had to add that.
You hear that, Brandon Flowers?
Right. Yeah. Don't disagree with my experience. Whatever. But it, I want to make sure I sort of clear that out of the way. But I think really these characters, like JD as a character and Zach Braff kind of as an actor too, because he's kind of typecast. And then Ted Allen as this really poised, but, also kind of fun and showy kind of host, very sing-songy, kind of has an old timey kind of radio kind of character about him. Something that I really like took on as at that age, especially like when my voice dropped and people are like, oh, you have a good radio voice. I'm like, that's my entire personality now, So I to see these people and to see them like othered and be like, oh, they're not part of our tribe, sorry. I was like, crap, I just kind of lost like somebody I identified with. And I think that's a lot of like what happened later in my life too. It was like when I was in college, I became friends with a lot of people who had different beliefs than me, different lifestyles from me. And as I tried to sort of play tug of war with this faith, I was like, oh, if I go back, if I firmly like just dive back into this brand of Lutheranism, I'm losing all these people, like legitimately. Like it's not like I couldn't associate with them. I could still associate with them, but I had to think about them differently. And that's almost worse. Like just the fact that I had to like to feel like truly welcome back in that community. I have to think about these people differently. Have I dropped an F-bomb on the show yet? But what a fucked up way to think about the world. Like just
yeah, that's like one, like I said, one of the few things that I find troubling sometimes just about like religion itself is just how us versus them it can be when you don't follow like a rule, right? Like it comes off very dogmatic at times, even though there are good things about every religion, because in the end I think the purpose of religion is just like a framework for people to build community and a shared set of moral values. But it can come off sometimes as a little bit too rigid.
When you get like, sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, because like it's when you think about it again, I think like I said, I think I briefly mentioned this on our last episode, just how things that develop with tradition, when you think about them and go back far enough, you typically find that very arbitrarily made up. And even if it's with good intention, sometimes you just need to fill in the blanks with something. And then unfortunately later down the line, centuries, if it sticks around that long, it could get misinterpreted. And then depending on how charismatic the person that misinterpreted, your intent was, it can change significantly and create something that you might not have wanted to begin with. And something like religion is something that, regardless of the type, a lot of the ones in modern religions today have super long histories. So it's gonna be hard to, I guess, like not necessarily rewire, but just suggest people to take a moment to just stop and think for a little bit.
Right.
And have a little bit of, empathy or like flexibility with, your teachings.
Yeah. I appreciate that you use the word arbitrary there, because that's been kind of a guidepost.
I don't want to put judgment on it. That's the thing.
No. Yeah, that's fair too. But I think that's a fair assessment here when I'm talking about my story, where it's like, I believe now in a God that isn't arbitrary.
Sure.
I feel like if God has something to tell us, it's purposeful, it's applicable, it helps us get through the day kind of thing. And excluding people of different sexual orientations or believing that the world is explicitly like 6,000 years old, like those aren't helpful. There's been so many things on this show so far where it's just like we say it out loud and it's like, yeah, that feels very obvious, but to say it out loud I think is very powerful. Yeah. And to that's been one of my guideposts for picking up the pieces of my Christianity and holding on to it in a way that I feel like is most productive to me and those around me, is just thinking about, is God giving me this rule or this idea for a purpose? And how can I use it for good? How can I use it for kindness? Yeah. If there's not a clear way for me to use it for kindness, if I have to do mental gymnastics in order to make this particular belief some semblance of extended kindness, it's like, no, it should be immediate. It should be kind. We should be loving people, you know, as long as we're not hurting them, we should be loving people on their terms, not on ours. So it's, that's what I go back to. So I appreciate that you used that term there. And I also want to shout out one of my big resources in, again, my faith deconstruction and reconstruction, and that's a podcast and whole community called The Bible for Normal People. It's a great name, kind of cheeky, but a great name. And they approach the Bible as Christians mostly. There's a few people who are on the show who come from different faith backgrounds, it's sort of just a strict historical atheistic or agnostic look at Christianity as well. But they try to break down the Bible in a little bit more of an academic sense, and then kind of in from a historical standpoint as well, they analyze it as like a text that was written within very specific historical contexts. And that helps guide some interpretation, but they're also open to a couple different interpretations of things. That's part of the joy of them too, is that they're, one of their main sort of mantras is that like, we can't know the way that like, is like, if there's one answer, we can't mm-hmm. know it. So we might as well explore all of these different answers together, which makes it a very powerful community. But one of the leaders of the organization, I think it's fair to call him a leader, I don't know his actual title. His name is Jared Bias, and he had a quote that's really stuck with me too, where it's, I don't know if I explicitly believe in, I don't think I believe in a hell specifically anymore, but regardless, he has a quote that I think really stuck with me. And again, is another sort of guidepost in that he said, I would rather be condemned for the people I accept than saved for the people I rejected. Ooh. I think that's really powerful, you know, and just that super, super spoke to me when I had heard him say that. And they've sort of lifted that one up as one of their kind of main tenets as well within their organization. So, and it's something that speaks to me, mm-hmm. you know, that's the kind of life I want to lead.
Yeah.
Again, speaking to what you've been talking about a little bit too, and your gripes as somewhat of an outsider, you know, seeing what religion can and can't do. It's like, it's felt from the inside too, for sure. And of course, you know, like you said, we don't want to cast judgment. We're not speaking for everybody's experience here. And I have plenty of people who are still well ingrained in their more conservative faiths and are doing just fine, you know, sure. as far as they've expressed to me. And I don't want to knock that either, but this is the journey that's worked for me, and songs like this really help me get through it and help me acknowledge the complexities of what it's like to leave something behind that's as treasured and loved as basically a complete life, you know? So it's intense, and it's allowed to be intense. And
for sure.
I think
for sure
for foreign girls to give me that space to believe, like, yeah, there's a part of you that has walked out. That's the lyric, right? You know, a part of me walked out. That's okay. Like, it's that part of me was meant to exist in that time, and there's something else that's moving on, and that's okay.
Yeah. And last thing before I move on from this is, I know we were just talking about like not casting judgment or speaking on behalf of other people, but I'm going to speak on behalf of you at this moment right now and say that I feel like with foreign girls, something like your decision to leave the church as like a goodbye, I feel like this song would hit harder from that lens. Because when I listened to that song, like I said, I took the ending to be, you know, goodbye to the friends I had. I loved you all as like a will that I had already passed. And that in and of itself is bittersweet, right? Because, you know, I'm gone and now, but like my loved ones can still hear my thoughts, you know, up until the very end. But with your story of like leaving the church, it being different than like, say, you dying and passing on, you leaving the church was like a decision that you consciously made. And I can only imagine that it might feel harder, because like with death, right, like no one really, God forbid, like no one hopefully chooses, you know, to go out on their own terms, I guess. Like a lot of times when people pass on and die, it's, you know, hopefully, hopefully, I feel so a little bad saying that, but like it's through like natural causes, out of your hands, like you pass on and then people, a lot of times, like out of your hands, it kind of happens. And, but with you leaving the church, this was something that you consciously decided to do. So you had more, I guess, agency. And I feel like, as I'm totally projecting right now, but I feel like that would hit harder because this is like something that is in your control and you're still making the decision to say goodbye to kind of like the life you grew up with, the community you grew up with. And that's got to be really hard. And I'm just like rereading the lyrics to the end of the song. It's just, you're just kind of consciously saying kind of goodbye to a lot of people you loved, a lot of people that you've had history with. But, you know, that outro ends with just the repetition of I loved you all, which, you know, it's this weird dichotomy of, right, like, I have to leave now, like, I'm going.
Yeah.
But I still love everybody, like, in my community.
Yeah. No, I think you're entirely fair to say that. And I appreciate you sort of taking that time to reread things and try to see things through sort of this new lens I've kind of presented. So I appreciate that. The number one thing is about this and hearing these last couple lines now. Number one, I can't thank my wife enough for like giving me a place to go after making this decision. You know, I think there's of the people who are aware of this faith transition that I've made, the people who think cruelest about it are probably like, oh, Dayton's wife led him astray. It's like, well, number one, fuck you. Like that's a terrible,
the harlot.
Right. Yeah. It's like that. What an awful thing to say, because anybody who has met Kate knows that she's just a vibrant, kind, welcoming, fun person. And she's the joy of my life.
God, if anybody led you astray, it'd be me.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Let's not go that far. But yes, to say goodbye to my previous faith life was one of the hardest decisions I ever had to make. But having Kate was such a reminder that I had a place to go. You know, it's like when I was, if I didn't have her, I don't know where I would have gone. Like, just to simply put it like that, where Kate accepts me in all of my complexities and all of my doubts and all of the sort of scraps of my old faith that I've held on to and rebuilt into something new. She accepts all of that, the whole journey, not just where I'm at now, but she's like, yeah, I know you used to believe these kind of things and be this kind of person, and that there's things that you miss about being in that space, but you're here now and you're fighting for something better. And she respects that whole transition and acknowledges and cherishes that whole connection. So at number one, that's something that should also kind of color your lens too, is just to know that like with her, the transition was possible. And with friends like you and my atheist friends and my friends who are still part of a Christian faith, but who have the openness to sort of accept my journey, that's where I went. You know, that's my afterlife after this change. And thank God for that. So that's the first thing I wanted to say about this sort of last stanza within the lens of my story. The other element is, if I can be so noble as to say, my decision to leave the church really was out of love for a broader sense of what the world is, you know. I hesitate to talk in these terms because it sounds so hoity-toity and sort of self-righteous, but I, in the grandest sense of the terms of what happened, I left in hopes of a greater world for everybody and being able to contribute to making that world, and that includes those people back in the church who, whether they supported me or kind of discolored the faith for me or completely abused me with it. All of them. I do present tense, love them all, and I am living my life the way I am now out of a hope of a better life for everybody, including them. So when we repeat I loved you all six times or whatever, that's true. Like that's, and that includes those people who may have hurt me back in the day, you mm-hmm. know, and who I might even struggle to think about right now, and some of the things that they said to me and the things that warped my worldview at the time, you know. It's so, that's part of what made the goodbye hard, is that it's like I know they would not understand that I'm trying to help everybody. So it I can't blame them either for,
I'm not trying to gaslight you, I'm trying to help you.
It's you know, I can't blame people for, especially older generations, for not completely seeing it my way, though, too, because it's, I mean, I spent, oh boy, in 2023, I was turning 29. So, wait, no, I don't remember. I wouldn't, math is fun. Yeah, 29. So I spent 29 years on the books with this faith, you know, probably 15 to 16 years completely convinced of it and trying to align myself with it, you know, a decade or so grappling with it and things like that. It's like it takes a lifetime to try to understand this stuff, and mm-hmm. I still don't understand it, but that's another sort of mantra of the Bible for normal people, is just being comfortable with the not knowing, being comfortable with the uncertainty of these kinds of questions, and finding the beauty in the uncertainty too. I think there's a more divine, a more profound sense of trust in something bigger than us when we say, hey, we don't have all the rules figured out and slapped into a book that we can teach to middle schoolers, and that's okay.
That is, yeah.
So
yeah, and I think, as I guess someone who did not have that like religious framework in my youth, but like became quote unquote like a man of science, I think I kind of view life in that a similar vein, where like we only know what we think we know, and even our like laws of physics, right? Like laws are not immutable. They're our best explanation at the phenomena around us. But if something were to come into our lives to prove, you know, that, you know, gravity is actually doesn't work the way that we think it does, I guess you need to be able to pivot and rework what you know to fit a new understanding of the world around you. And that's, again, just quick go back to why I think sometimes religion can be a little bit dogmatic, is just the lack of flexibility paints you into a corner. I feel a lot of times when us mm-hmm. as a species, you know, we're just animals on this earth. What do we know? We only know what we know, and clearly not everything. And we try to strive to do good and be good and learn and do better. And sometimes that is inevitably going to involve us grappling with things that conflict and don't match our like previous understanding. And I feel like being able to adapt and be flexible is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think moving on, I guess, for religion, I think we have time for, I guess, to discuss one little quick question that I had been thinking about in my, I guess, listening of the song, you know, how Jack Antonoff had said Foreign Girls was a song about post-death, how this was like an epilogue. I'm like just staring at the album cover right now and just looking at that face, and I just can't not see that photo on like an easel or something. And it made me think a little bit, like kind of like with this song
right
in mind, what do you think like you'd like your loved ones to know, kind of if you were to, like, once you're gone? And it doesn't have to be anything like big or anything, but just, have you like thought about that at all?
I'm super glad you asked it, because I did think about that when listening to this song again, and because I knew we were going to talk about sort of my side of the coin. And, you know, again, I apologize for taking up so much time talking about it, but this idea of death is very close to a lot of what I was talking about too. And it did make me think about okay, there's people in my life where I'm explicitly disconnected from because of this change in my faith that I've made, or relationships are a little bit more fraught or just a little bit more complex, you know, whatever. So what do I want at the end of it? What do I want my loved ones to think about me after I've passed on? I actually wrote something down, and I think I'm going to hold on to this one because it really summed up a lot of how I want to live my life for me right now. And I just wrote, I want my loved ones to be as content as possible with the time they had with me. And that's why I have to live a faith that empowers kindness, not limits it. So I don't want people to think that there was something left unsaid or that they didn't get the time with me that they wanted. And I know that's not a realistic goal, but I want people to find contentedness in the fact that they knew me. I think that's maybe a more attainable way of putting it, but I want people to look at my cool, regal portrait that I'll inevitably get done here before, as part of my will and testament. And I want them to feel some sort of contentedness.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's kind of all you can ask for, right? Like, to have people celebrate the, I guess, way you lived rather than like how you went.
Yeah.
For me, I think if I were to go like today, I think honestly, this song would just be a great song just to play as my like last testament. Cause I had mentioned that I really resonate with the line, cause I know I've been a stranger lately, and that's mostly due to me and my personality being shy and a quiet person, kind of like one of those like, don't speak until you're spoken to type of like mentalities. And I know in my past that has created some friction. Honestly, I think like the outro coming off of the chorus to Foreign Girls, I think does a good job of expressing like what I would want to express if I had to like record a message to be played after I died. And that I think simply that like acknowledgement that I know that I can be a stranger at times, but to say goodbye to everyone I remember, kind of similar to you, just hoping that anybody who knew me found some contentment, that I loved everybody that, or I guess I loved most people that I have met and been able to be fortunate to spend time with. Reading like the outro reminded me of a time where I was made very aware of the way I am, I guess, when I can be quiet and not vocal about a lot of stuff. It reminded me of a story when I actually moved back to Madison from Boston back like 2022. And I had a good friend that we like connected on a lot of hobbies and shared interests. And she had lent me some books for like tabletop RPG systems that I was really interested in at the time. And like I read them. And then I had to move back to Madison relatively quickly. And so I moved back. And one day I get like a Discord message from her asking if I still had like a book of hers that she had lent me. I had some of the books, but not all of them. And I think there had been a miscommunication that I thought she was kind of like giving them to me because she was kind of doing like some spring cleaning, or maybe she did intend to give them to me at the time, but then something came up and it's like, oh, I wonder if Jordan still has the book. Maybe I could get it back. Maybe that was the case. But I didn't. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I might have gotten rid of the book when I was moving and I was cleaning out. And then I think a day later, she replied back with this really long paragraph, like not essay, but like a long message about how she was really like heartbroken and sad that I would do something like this and that I treated, you know, her property with like not enough care, that I would just throw it out. And there were a lot of other things baked in the message about how like I didn't say goodbye when I left Boston. And I remember reading that and feeling so bad because like I thought we were really good friends, and that is something that I think I have just been used to, that might have been, you know, different from her life, that I've moved into a lot of different places, and the moving typically happens really quickly.
Oh, and sure.
I'm not used to like having big, you know, send-offs or anything. I remember when I graduated undergraduate in the Bay Area, I think my parents came to watch me graduate, and then the very next morning packed up all of my furniture into the van or what we could carry and drove from California back to Wisconsin. Like, didn't even have 24 hours after I graduated to like say goodbye to everybody. Like, it just, things like that in my life happened really quickly. And this was another time where it's like, oh, I just had to move and stuff. And the fact that like she felt, I guess, betrayed because I didn't say goodbye. I understood where she was coming from. But at the same time, like, it made me realize like how I live my life.
Wow. Yeah.
Sometimes, I don't know what the right word is, like, not fast paced, but like,
right.
It can come off as cold sometimes. And it's like in these moments where I realize that, or at least how I read the song of Foreign Girls, I know I can be a stranger sometimes. I feel like, you know, it might seem like I'm a stranger. I just want to like say that most people I encounter in life and spend any like more than an hour with, I feel very deeply like appreciative of the time that they've given me and I give to them. And again, I think
sure.
If I were to go out today in the next couple of days and had to record something beforehand to be played, I think the outro does almost a perfect job of kind of the sentiment I would want to kind of put out in the world, right? Where it's just, thank you, goodbye, I loved you all. And I don't know if everybody I have met and I'm friends with would know that before, you know, listening to me. And I'm sure just being the person I am and being more cognizant about that, I'm sure I have friends that if I were to just like up and move or God forbid die,
yeah,
like, oh, that's just like Jordan, just, you know, didn't even give us a heads up.
Yeah.
And so I would probably want to have a message, something like that, you know, just to reiterate that, like, I guess my love language had never been like words of affirmation or anything like that, but like time and energy and like things done with people. And, you know, everyone takes that differently, right? That's why people make a lot of money writing books about people's different love languages and things like that. But yeah, I think that's the message I would want to send if I had to record something.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that, man. I'm sorry you had to go through that. I know I've been through some similar situations too, where it's just like my operating system wasn't compatible with somebody else's sort of perception of the kind of things I was putting out in the world. And it's entirely valid on both sides. And it's just a reiteration, I think, of both of our stories here, that we're both trying to do the best that we can. We're always, I can say confidently, you know, between two of us, you and I are always trying to do the best that we can with the information that we're given and with the tools that we have at hand. And it's okay for that to fall short sometimes. It's okay for our personality to, you know, maybe rub somebody the wrong way, as long as that's communicated and you'll figure it out in the end. And, you know, it's okay for us to grapple with a faith upbringing for, you know, as long as I have and continue to do in some ways, and, you know, and still just try to make the best of it. You know, that's like, I think to just put that kind of energy out into the world, to be gracious through that, even when there is conflict, when there is disagreement, when there's misperception, you know, I think just having graciousness cut through there and to say to the world, thank you, I love you, I'm sorry. I think that's which is kind of funny, because I think that's an old, I don't know, I struggle to identify which particular culture it was a part of, but I learned to forage on a college volunteer trip, and one of the gentlemen we were working with said, you know, he was very, very spiritually minded about the whole earth, and I think it's a good practice in general for just interacting with people and having a complex relationship with people. Every time he foraged something, he said, thank you, I'm sorry, I love you. Whether it was a plant or a berry, or we didn't find any bugs, but this was the kind of guy who would just eat a bug, sure. But just to have that mantra in mind, to have that phrase in mind, as we're interacting with anything, I think is totally valid. because it recognizes the complexities of everything that we're doing, you know, and as much as we can simplify those complex relationships, you know, I feel like that does a pretty good open-ended way of doing it too. It applies to a lot of different journeys. So, well, I know we're running a little bit long on time here, but I really appreciate you hearing me out here and giving me the space to share my story. And I wanted to kind of end on two little quick anecdotes. Sure. I know we're running long on time here, but one's kind of wistful and something that we can leave this song thinking about, and the other one's just kind of funny and kind of, you know, bittersweet in its own way too. But one quote that I thought about as I was listening to this song and thinking about the people I've lost lately and some of the ideas of what like it means for a story to end or for a life to end, I was actually taken back to a quote from the great Keanu Reeves. I don't know if he was the originator of this quote, but he was on the Colbert Show
I know this quote, yeah.
Some odd months or some odd years ago. So you know where I'm going with this. Stephen Colbert asked him, what do you think happens when we die? And Keanu said, the people who loved us will miss us. And that's just like, I mean, that's it, right? You know, that's just the reality. Yeah. Whatever you believe or whatever you don't believe, like that's the reality of it. And that's what we have to operate on. And it reminded me too of, you know, those little games like online, you'll run into it on Instagram or Twitter or wherever, where it's like, oh, the last text that you sent is going to be your epitaph. What would it be? Post in the comments. I remember I got one of those came across my feed, and I looked into my phone, and the last text I had sent, this was like during the early hours of work day, I had sent to Kate, I miss you already.
Ooh.
Which I think would be a great epitaph.
Yeah, that's a big oof right there.
Like just imagine walking up to a gravestone and seeing I miss you already. Like what a great kind of energy to put out into the world. What a great kindness, what a great graciousness that you can really read into that. And I know certainly if I were to use that, I would want people to feel that, you know, that graciousness for the world, that thanks, that love, that can do the world a lot of good. So I appreciate that this song gets that message across.
Yeah.
So
that was a good quote. Yeah. And I guess with that, we'll wrap it up here for a long episode. To our listeners, if you got this far, thank you again from both of us for listening. And if you want to reach out with any comments or stories of yourself in talking about religion or just kind of your own personal things, we'd love to hear it. And you can feel free to reach us at marathonmixtapespodcast@gmail.com. There'll be links in the description for the podcast, so you can find it there as well. And until the next episode, I hope you guys take care. Thanks again, Dayton, for your stories and conversation as always.
Yeah. Thanks, Jordan. And to you and all of our listeners out there, miss you all already.